Wake Up with Bill Finch is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Speak your mind. 203-333-9422.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Wake Up. Here in the beginning of April, the April showers season that we're in, but we're also in a phenomenal Final Four season here. Everybody's brackets are probably messed up as mine, although I have to brag, in the women's brackets, I got all four teams. It's a little easier, perhaps, because there's some fewer powerhouses. But I'm so proud of our UConn women. I was hoarse the other night cheering them on. And, of course, we're going to all cheer them on today. We're going to be joined in the studio just a few minutes with Aziz Dacon, who is the executive director of the Connecticut Roundtable for Climate and Jobs, great organization that puts together interfaith advocates, labor advocates, and environmentalists all together to prioritize our fight against climate must save us money, must create jobs, and must lower greenhouse gases. It's a great organization. It's similar to what we did in Bridgeport, as you recall. And I'm honored to welcome him in just a minute. But before we do, we've got to just tee this up a little bit. We're going to be talking about climate change. And as you know, we now have an administration that denies science, denies the existence of climate change. Man is affecting the climate. It is certain. 99.9% of the scientists agree. And there's the thing about the science denial that we've got to review here just for everyone. Get it straight in our minds early this morning. It's foggy out, but our brains are going to be clear. Science is its own doubter. The scientific method requires continual retesting of data, making sure that we're correct, having peers review our work, doubting all the time that we've reached the final conclusion on a subject matter. Oftentimes we do. Climate change is certainly one of those areas where there's almost unanimous support that mankind is cooking the planet. We're lobsters in a pot. Excuse me, but whether or not we're going to recognize that or not in time is why we're talking today about climate change with Aziz Dacon. One more last word about science denial. Let's say you're driving, the guy who's driving up to a bridge and he gets to that beautiful Mario Cuomo Tappan Zee Bridge, which I was so honored to participate in the building of, and he stops right at the beginning of the bridge and he says, you know, I think that bridge is going to fall down. I don't trust the thousands of engineers that had master's and doctoral degrees that designed that bridge. I don't trust them. I'm smarter than they are. I'm going to block traffic. I'm not going over that bridge. Now, that's ridiculous, isn't it? But that's what people who deny science do all the time. They don't give credit to the tremendous scientific method that human beings have evolved to create and has kept us safe so long. So without any further ado, we know about science denial. We know about climate change. Now all that's gone. We can now concentrate on what we reasonable people here in Connecticut, we just heard we're better off than any other state. And I hope some people here start realizing that. But now we're going to actually talk about the subject matter and what we can do, what we can do. We saw all the protesters yesterday taking to the streets. I was honored to be at a protest in Westport where leaders of the community there had about 2,000 people on the Ruth Stein Krauss Cohen UN Peace Bridge. And we were actively fighting to get our government to stop denying science and to fight climate change. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome here to Wake Up this Sunday morning, Aziz Dacon, the director of the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs. Welcome, Aziz.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm better now that I'm talking to you. You're the man in Hartford. You're the man in the middle. You're the reasonable voice among the Tower of Babel. And you get everybody together in the room and you put your fist on the table and you get things done.
Well, we try. I mean, you know, it's a collective action. You said it really well yesterday. Thousands of people across the country, hundreds of thousands of people across the country took to the streets. And I love your I've never used the analogy of the Cuomo Bridge collapsing, but I think you're dead on. You know, you're right. And, you know, we already see that it's not a distant threat. Climate change isn't a distant threat. It's affecting Connecticut. It's affecting just about everything that we do. So I'm glad to be here and talk to you about the work that we're all doing together.
Well, you know, you talk about distant threats. We used to think that we would never have to fight our own White House for authoritarian endings that they want to implement, or fascist endings. And we're now fighting an internal battle in this country. Thankfully, we have little voices like this here Sunday morning that can shout from the hilltops and wake up to the threat to our democracy that we're all in the middle of right now. But putting that aside, there's also a lot of emphasis to fight climate change from the private sector. We see investors in renewable energy at rates that are far surpassing things like investment in coal. We see businesses continuing their DEI policies in order to make sure that their workforce is as strong as possible. We see a lot of things in the private sector continuing despite the fact. Now, we do know that he's going after universities and law firms he disagrees with. There's no reason why he wouldn't go after companies. But let's just be hopeful for a little bit here. Connecticut's a tiny little geographical area, but we really box outside of our weight class, don't we?
We actually do. And, you know, but we're still a little bit behind. We're behind some of our neighboring states on climate action. And, you know, we have a number of bills in the legislature this session that are trying to rectify those problems and to try to, you know, full force action on climate change. And one of them is HB 5004, which is an omnibus climate bill that hopes to take action, you know, to reduce the risks to public health, to build up infrastructure, and more important, to try to start putting a roadmap together that helps ratepayers as well, supports business, supports climate change, and, you know, if we do it right, just begin to address the rates of electricity costs in this state.
Well, yeah, you know, the interesting thing, and in the promo, you probably heard me talk about how the things that we want to do save us money, create local jobs, and reduce climate change and the emissions of greenhouse gases. And when we did the Be Green 2020 plan in Bridgeport, I'm very proud of that. Many cities tried to emulate Bridgeport after that and still are. The mantra was, it first has to save the city money. We don't have extra money to invest. It was 2008. The economy was crashing. We had to find money. So it had to save us money. It had to create local jobs, especially in impacted communities like Bridgeport, where we've seen it just in the last couple of weeks, four or five construction sites shut down because of illegal hiring and unlicensed workers. So we want to maintain that quality, and it wasn't local workers, out-of-state workers. We want to have local workers, and, of course, we want to reduce greenhouse gases.
Yeah, and I think what we also need to do is provide benefits to businesses so that they come to Connecticut and they realize this is a pro-business atmosphere. You know, people like to equate the climate change bills and whatever, and think that it's going to raise prices, it's going to, you know, be detrimental to bringing businesses into the state. And it's not true. I mean, we've seen the, you know, expanding interest in planning for renewable energy brings down costs, and we haven't been able to do that here yet. So we need to put a proactive, pro-business, pro-climate bill out there and start the process. We're behind. And, you know, we've tried to pass this last year. It failed in the Senate. And
So this year it's a House bill. And we're going to take a quick break here, Aziz, and come right back after a few commercial messages to pay for our airtime here.
It's time to wake up with Bill Finch, 203-333-9422. Only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And we're back to wake up this Sunday morning here on WICC 600 AM 95.9 FM. I want to thank our guest, Aziz Dacon, who's the executive director of the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs, which sort of says it all, right? And his message is that despite the fact that the nation seems to be crumbling around us, there's worth a fight here in the legislature for a new set of bills, but primarily House Bill 504. He was explaining to us that in the past it was a Senate bill. It had some problems. So the new hope and the new belief this year is that this is going to quickly go through the House and then give the Senate time to do whatever it needs to do to get the bill passed. Is that your take on it, Aziz?
That's a good take, yeah. And I want to add something else, because you mentioned the work that you did in Bridgeport as mayor with the B2. And we want to make sure that as we advance climate policy, we also prioritize environmental justice. You know, Bridgeport, unfortunately, is one of those historically overburdened communities. And we need to put investments into cities like Bridgeport that protect the citizens, they protect health. And, you know, part of that is what this bill is trying to do, is to create goals and set standards, not just in the climate field, but in, you know, in terms of labor, the people who are going to do the work and infrastructure. We want to make sure that the IBEW, the trades, you know, all the unions that are the heartbeat of this state, get those jobs. And you said it really well. Let's not bring outside people from outside states. We have a workforce here. This bill builds up workforce development and trains people for the new economy, for new infrastructure work. And I think that's equally important to recognize, because it ties into what the problems we have in climate change.
You know, I'd just like to talk a little bit about how government does work. And just the bill that you're talking about does direct PURA to create a docket on energy and renewable energy at a large scale. And I just want to point out that, you know, a lot of the utilities are bashing PURA and Melissa Gillette in particular, right, because she's stood up for the consumer and the environment. And I want to give kudos to her for her sometime lonely fight against massive forces that are trying to destroy her credibility. And she's just one of the most genuine, intelligent, fair-minded people I've ever met in government. So it's sort of a microcosm of what Trump does to his opponents. But let's hope our utilities...
The work that she does also echoes what the public servants, you know, the people who run agencies actually do. And I think the operative word that you used is true. It's, she's a genuine person, and she, you know, she's in a tight spot. We need to give her all the support we possibly can.
And I'm so impressed by the things she does that never seem to see the light of day in the media. It's an amazing thing. She's created a docket where, and the docket, ladies and gentlemen, are basically, it's the word they use for like a court hearing, or actually a court hearing and a legislative process all in one, because they hear testimony and they then create policies that are over the transmission of electricity. I would say, unfortunately, in Connecticut, they're split between transmission and generation, and that's had some good effects, but some bad effects, and we'll see where that goes in the future. But so the docket is a way that our state government's authority for electrical generation and gas generation and water, the utilities, how they regulate these monopolies that we create. Now, we create these monopolies because you don't want to have 10 competitors running their electrical wires down your street. Be a mess. So we've decided we'll have regulated monopolies. What she's done is on the transmission side, is she's created a most favored nation status, is like the legal way you look at it, for some startup ventures to sell electricity onto the grid. And when they work, she helps promote them and grow them within our system. And when they don't, they cut off the subsody that they've been getting. Yep. So it's an amazing thing. It's been now looked at all by other states all around the country. So hats off to PURA and what they're doing. In this bill, they'll have another docket for PURA that would talk about bringing renewables to scale. It will also, I guess, talk about a plan to deploy more and more solar carports.
And also thermal energy networks as well, Bill. And you know that from what's happening in Bridgeport as well. And that's of another vital piece of how we reduce rates, how we can bring energy, you know, heating sources to homes and businesses. And it's a clean energy source. And I think we forget that too, right? We're so concerned about, you know, ratepayer issues that we forget that we can actually put clean energy into transmission. And it's important to recognize all of what we're trying to do. It's not a one issue fix. There's a lot of different pieces to this. And you're right. I love the way you just talked about PURA. I don't think people understand how that works and how important it is for the state.
And how nice it would be maybe if they also could help put some controls on the generation side. It seems like the consumer and the working man is always taking it on the chin with large parts of their income going toward these essentials. And for wealthier people, it's a small portion of their income. And it doesn't affect them as much. So for workers and for the environment.
And this bill, I'm sorry, and this bill also requires DEEP to develop a plan to install efficient heat pumps. And that's also going to help the consumer and to bring clean energy into the system.
Well, I know that you go way back in a lot of struggles. I know that your work took you in Manhattan to fight for these very viable community garden systems that you have in Manhattan and elsewhere in the boroughs. Tell us a little bit about how your work there prepared you to help Connecticut fight climate change.
Well, thanks. Thanks for taking me back decades. I appreciate that, Bill.
Well, you know, for those listeners who haven't seen Aziz Dacon's beautiful, bushy face, he does not look his age. He's a healthy guy. He's a boxer. So when you want to send somebody into a legislative meeting, I recommend you go in with a boxer.
Yeah, I guess so. Listen, so what happened in New York, it was the New York City Community Garden Coalition. There were 500-plus community gardens throughout New York City.
Imagine that. Oh, my goodness. So there was the equivalent of many farms in New York City.
Yeah, and some of them, many of them grow food, locally sourced food. My favorite story about New York City Community Gardens is one that was on the Lower East Side. It's still there. And a group from Bangladesh started to move. You know, I mean, people from Bangladesh started to move into the neighborhood. They became members of the community garden. And in the beginning, each of those personal plots had their own set of vegetables. So, you know, the Bangladeshi folks had their specific vegetables. The the white folk had theirs. And over the years, you couldn't tell the difference between the plots because everybody was sharing. Everyone was learning through the community garden. And I think part of what we recognize is when Hurricane Sandy came through New York, the buildings next to the community gardens had the least damage. And that's because the community gardens were sponges and they absorbed an awful lot of water. And that's how we work to fight climate crisis and, you know, to make sure that these open spaces are available to people and that are climate mitigators. And I think that's what I learned most. I also learned that, you know, as a community organizer, it's Tip O'Neill used to say everything is local. I think everything is actually hyper-local. It literally goes street to street. And so that's what I bring to Connecticut is just this idea that together we can affect change.
Well, you actually worked in a city that's population is more than double our entire state. So Connecticut, when I say we fight above our weight class, you know, I really mean that because, I mean, where do you have, strategic weapons for national defense produced here? We have two incredibly important universities, the University of Connecticut and Yale University. Go Huskies, go Elies. And we've got one of the most beautiful state capitals. We've got rolling hills. We've got the Long Island Sound and Connecticut River estuary. Tons and tons of nature all around us. Tremendous fishing. I love to fish, whether you're fishing in the river, the sound, or in many of our streams that are all stocked by the DEP, by your tax dollars. You know, as we look and see, yesterday at the rally, Aziz, and you've been to your fair number of rallies. I go to your one every year where we have the youth come into the Capitol and try to tell the old generation that they're dragging their heels on climate. They're sort of listening. They're getting there. It's getting better.
They're getting there.
Yeah. But, you know, we were chanting hands off, right? So hands off Social Security. Whoever thought we'd have a president who would have an aide calling the most treasured American social program ever created a Ponzi scheme. You know, may he be forever damned for his statement.
Or Bill, they call it an entitlement. We put money into that program. It's not an entitlement.
By the way, what's wrong with an entitlement anyway?
No, an entitlement is what ExxonMobil gets when they get subsidies.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the entitlement. Social Security is not an entitlement.
It's amazing how quickly so many Americans have forgotten, give us your tired, your huddled masses yearning to be free. We've gotten away from that, and now we're basically worried about tampons in the boys' room and Christian nationalist agendas. But in any case, so you went from New York City, where you got most of your boxing training, I understand, and saving community gardens, to coming to Connecticut, which is a large community garden, right? I mean, that's basically we've got our natural areas and we've got our cultivated areas, and unfortunately, you have a lot of impermeable pavement. I do remember that in the period from 1990 to 2000, Connecticut was the second fastest sprawling state as a percentage of our land area covered, which means roofs and pavement and houses and buildings. And I do believe that we've become smarter with that. I mean, a lot of the activism around local zoning, there's some good aspects to that. If they're pushing for things like an 80-foot buffer on watercourses, 50 to 80 feet, something like that. There's people that you look at what's happening in Trumbull Center, where that's been developed right to the edge of the Pequannock River. And currently the plans that I've seen do not include any remediation of the river. Let's hope I'm wrong. Let's make sure that they build some marshlands into that project that they're doing. But it's just it's a trophy trout stream, which I fish, but there's about only 2 feet to 3 feet between the macadam and the edge of the stream.
Yeah.
So our impact, you talked about how all politics is local. It's really all politics is micro-local. We're going to take a little bit of a break here for news, and we're going to come back and continue our talk with Aziz Dacon, and he's going to tell you the groups that are working to save Connecticut's effort to fight climate change and ramp it up and get back into the lead of the nation. We'll be right back to hear more from Aziz right after this message.
Join the conversation, 203-333-9422. Back to Wake Up with Bill Finch. Live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up with our guest, Aziz Dacon from the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs. It's an interfaith labor and activist coalition that fights for good environmental policy that help us all keep our water clean and our air breathable and our water swimmable and our climate not going over 1.5 degrees hotter. Unfortunately, we've all heard the news reports recently that is not attainable, and we're going to have to revise the 1.5 degrees because as much as the legislation has improved and we've moved toward renewables, we're not doing it nearly fast enough. And that which we have already baked into the atmosphere, because as you know, if you study climate change, there's a elasticity to it that we're going to be, even if we stop right now, the climate will continue to warm because of the increased chemical reaction and absorption of heat in the atmosphere. So that's an unfortunate thing that we're going to have to deal with. Those of us with little pigment in our skin are going to end up getting more skin cancers, I assume, because it's going to be a hell of a lot hotter. I guess maybe we'll just stay inside more. But getting back to House Bill 5004, which is where we've really invested, all of us who care about climate and the environment have invested most of our time. In addition to the efficiencies for heat pumps, there's also a lot to talk about in terms of nature-based solutions, also in the thermal loop provision. Now, for the readers who don't know about a thermal loop, it's sort of a cogen, right? Cogeneration. You generate electricity. In this case, the Bridgeport thermal loop will be generating electricity with a fuel cell. The state of Connecticut does not encourage fuel cells, ironically, despite the fact that they are made right here in Connecticut, and they are a transition mode of generation between fossil fuels and green fuels, because they can run on both natural gas and hydrogen. And right now, hydrogen is much more expensive than natural gas. And until the price of natural gas goes up and the price of hydrogen goes down, fuel cells need to be deployed, because they will then be able to quickly, almost immediately, begin burning green fuels when they become affordable. Unfortunately, Connecticut doesn't do that. A little asterisk next to that. But the one in Bridgeport will be permitted, and they will generate electricity, and then the quote-unquote waste heat that you normally have to pay to get rid of because it overheats your equipment. You have to figure out a way to dissipate the heat into the atmosphere, wasting it. This captures the heat, puts it in water in a super insulated pipe only about a foot and a half under the ground, so it doesn't require major excavation. And it ties together buildings that will take that hot water off that was wastewater, waste hot water, wasted heat. It will take it and circulate through the building to heat or cool that building. It will be an energy loop after the electricity is generated. So they'll create green electricity, because in Class 1 fuel cells are considered Class 1 renewables, even though this particular DEP doesn't, but that's the state philosophy overall. And this is a great thing. It's like cogeneration, right? Only this thermal loop is just phenomenal. Now, here's that's sort of the intro. Here's the problem. It's still not built. We permitted in Bridgeport while I was in office. We pushed the project. We brought them to the state and investors. We were a big supporter of this. Wanted it done. Still not done. Now, you could say, well, maybe it's the local government or state government, but neither one has really been helpful to the way that you need to be helpful with startup ventures. Each one of these new renewables, they may be taking technology that's all over Europe, that's all over the world, but it's not here. And so it's new, and it has to be supported as a new venture.
You know, one of the things that this bill also, 5004, does too, is it makes air source and ground source heat pumps eligible for reimbursement to school construction grant programs. And, you know, you also said something about, you know, how much we've been building and how many rooftops we've created. If we put solar panels on many of the public buildings that we have and the private buildings, we can increase our energy sources. And so I like what you just said. All the work that we're talking about in this bill and that we've been talking about literally for decades
since the 1960s, since at least the first Earth Day.
You know, this work has been done in Europe and in Asia. And why are we so far behind? And I think as part of it is what you just referred to, is it's a new technology, it's a new business, but we need to support that. And, you know, if we just talked about, you know, the word entitlement for Social Security, but we can support businesses and give them subsidies to get the startups. And then once they get going, we take those subsidies away. And all of that creates more work, more union-led living wage jobs, and that's the direction that we need to take, and that's the direction of 5004, that the bill that's currently in the legislature is trying to advance. We want to upscale, update, and create energy efficiency standards, and we want to make sure that as we do this, we don't harm the businesses, we support them, and that we eventually will lower rates for taxpayers, for ratepayers. It's a win for everybody, but you have to start somewhere. And, you know, by denying everything doesn't help.
Let me ask you. And I'm so happy you mentioned the union work. But let's just talk about that for a second. Is the language in this bill strong enough? Does it trigger Davis-Bacon prevailing wages enough, do you think? Are all of our agencies, do you think, in Connecticut doing their level best to go out and find the contractors who are hiring union workers? I mean, look, this is a little advertisement. You know that your chairman of your board is on the board that hired me, Dan McInerney, the business manager for Local 488, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Just an advertisement here. Those people that go through the IBEW apprenticeship are some of the most highly skilled electricians in the world. Some of the most highly skilled electricians in the world are right here in Connecticut, because we require licensed license acquisition before you can be a full electrician, a journeyed electrician, that we pay prevailing wage in our government jobs, that we require contractors to participate in apprenticeship programs. And I will say that the graduation rate of our tuition-free apprentices, anybody out there that's looking for a new career, IBEW every year brings in a new class of what will be the best electricians in the world. Your entry to the middle class and a wonderful stable income for the rest of your life and health care is yours if you work hard and you're smart and you understand this stuff. It's an amazing thing, but do we require it enough? I mean, why can't the state just like put their foot down and say, you know, we prefer unions because we get so much more. What about prevailing wage?
Yeah. You know what we really, you know, to that point, Bill, what we really need to do is legislate that, codify what you just said to make sure that unions get these jobs and that we support them. You know, we have strong labor standards in 5004. Are they the best, strongest? You know, it's what we know we can pass at this point. You as a mayor, you as a legislator, you know how this works. We put bills out
it's
that we
like
hope
sausage.
That we want to get passed.
It's like sausage. Watching sausage get made, grind it all up.
No, come on. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What we want to try to do is why do we have to go through this every session? Why do we have to put these labor standards into every bill? Why aren't they codified?
Well, there is the myth out there, right? We're battling the myths out there that union labor is more expensive, which it is not in the totality of things. So if you want to guarantee everybody's from your community and is taken care of with health care and they're not going to lose their house when they retire, then, you know, that's a pro-union stand. So listen, we're going to take a little break and come back with Aziz Dacon from the Connecticut Roundtable for Climate and Jobs after these messages.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome back to Wake Up this Sunday morning. You know, some of those ads for pharmaceutical and drugs that they have, the ad sounds so good. I don't have those ailments, but sometimes you just, well, maybe I should try that drug. The ad was so nice. The music, it was beautiful. I don't know. So listen, we're talking to Aziz Dacon from the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs. And just give us your website address, if you would, Aziz, so people could go and find out ways that they could support the Connecticut Roundtable.
Yeah. Well, you just said it. It's Connecticut Roundtable Climate and Jobs.org. It's a pretty nice website, actually. It's pretty easy to maneuver. And there's a donate button there in case you're interested in helping the cause.
Well, just so we know, the listeners know, this is a charity. This is a 501c3.
Right.
They rely on donations from churches and labor unions and businesses and individuals to fund their work. And without their work, I can tell you that there's a lot of things in the Capitol that wouldn't be getting done. You know, we have our, you know, CCAGs, and we have our Sierra, and we have our League of Conservation Voters, and I'm Save the Sound, and I'm sure I'm going to leave somebody out, and they'll be upset with me. But we have those. But what you've heard today from Aziz is unique. What this is, you know, look, I've been an environmentalist since the first Earth Day. We're going to talk about Earth Day in just a second, but it's coming right up. You know, I've always felt that, you know, you've got to be able to get things passed. You've got to be able to compromise, and yet you still can't lose your passion for what drives us all. The things that started under, of all people, Richard Nixon with the creation of the EPA after the first Earth Day. Now, he was forced to do it, but he did it because it was good politics. It wasn't tariffs. It wasn't tearing down agencies. It wasn't eliminating our social safety net. It was positive in a direction of swimmable water, breathable air. Really, that's partisan? That was never partisan. But now, swimmable water, breathable air, and the chemical reactions in our environment from the pollution that are heating our planet has become partisan. Shame on all the people that make it partisan. Stuart McKinney was a great environmentalist. He was our congressman. He was a Republican. Richard Nixon was an environmental president with a track record. Probably him and Kennedy and a few others had great environmental track records. So it wasn't partisan, and now it is. But I do think that the one part about the bill that ties nicely into Earth Day is the nature-based solutions. I'm just going to list them, and then I want to get your feelings on what you're going to be doing on Earth Day. And I'd like to give you a chance to talk a little bit in the last few minutes about the great staff that you've assembled. Tell us a little bit about them and where they come from and why their perspectives are important. But the nature-based solutions, as you've called out in 5004, House Bill 504, water diversion, keeping the water out of sewer systems where it is our single largest energy consumer in a city is your wastewater treatment plant. So keeping the clean water out of the polluted water. Otherwise, you burn it off with natural gas, and it's terribly inefficient. Sequestration, planting more trees, preserving forests, controlling invasives, restoring biodiversity, and planting trees in cities. Please, all the mayors, get behind an urban forestry program, right, Aziz? What are all the ways that those trees in the city help us, even if you don't live in the city?
Trees are carbon mitigators, right? And they're vital. They create a heat canopy, and they're vital to they're not just beautiful. They're vital to the survival of the planet, frankly.
Yeah, and you never see a beautiful car ad made on a treeless street either. You know, I always remind people: listen, trees are part of our evolution as a species. We love trees innately, even if we don't understand them. We know when we're around them. We know what they give off as life sustaining. And, you know, unfortunately, in the cities, the snow shelves, that little piece of land between the sidewalk and the street, can only support smaller trees. But actually, that's great because that makes you plant the right tree for the right place. A small dogwood, a service berry, a redbud tree that doesn't grow too tall is perfect for that. And here's the environmental justice aspect. Did you ever drive through a poor neighborhood on a hot day? If they don't have trees, which most of them don't, because they've been poor now for over 60 or 70 years, and they've been disbanded, forgotten by the many administrations, so there weren't a lot of services there, like tree planting and splash pads and things like that, that we tried to mitigate during my term in office. But how terrible is it to see people sitting on their front porch with fans just trying to not die from the heat in some of the poorer neighborhoods? Yeah. If we had planted trees 20 years ago, those people would have shade. Why is shade That's partisan? Right. Why is shade based on race? Why is shade based on income?
Yeah, well, that's all, you know, that's another show, Bill. That's a show about environmental justice, and it's why we're failing.
If
it's
you want to convince people.
It's why we're failing the marginalized communities. It's why we're failing people who don't have the income to be able to move to a tree-lined street, right?
Right.
And so we have to, instead of them moving, we have to move it to them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, that's so important to realize how much work we can actually do in nature-based solutions. And you know, I keep coming back to the idea that we can make so much happen if we work together. And, you know, we make compromises along the way legislatively. Somebody told me that, you know, 5004 is a pragmatic bill. And I think
those
you know,
are the best
years
kind.
Ago,
I'd, have they hated, passed.
I'd have hated to hear that. But pragmatism is what we need right now. Right. And we need to get things passed. And so we want to make sure that the work that we do is legislatively conceivable. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Passable. And to make sure that we, you know, that we address the environmental injustices that have happened and to be very conscious about environmental justice.
Well, we have a few minutes left, and I want to give you a little bit of time to talk about the wonderful staff that you've assembled. But I do want to just mention one thing that Kevin Sullivan used to say to us when I was in the Senate: don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
That's right.
And you're doing good, Aziz. You're doing good.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate you letting me have a moment to talk about our staff. You know, we're a small group, with myself included. We're four people on in the round table. We have a brilliant policy director, Allison Pilcher, who helped write this bill.
She's, I think, 18, who, right?
Yeah, exactly, right?
No. Talk about getting our youth involved.
Absolutely. And then we have Sydney Barnwell, who's our comms person, communications director. She never ceases to amaze me. We talk about, you know, let's get some stuff out on social media. We're on the phone. 3 seconds later, it's already out. And it's out in a way that people can understand. And I think that goes the same with Allison's work in the policy area, where she, you know, she puts things out that people can understand. It's readable. It's understandable. And then never forget Michelle Ekman, who's our associate director, who I always like to say is the glue. She kidded me a couple of years ago and said, do you mind me nudging you about things? And I'm like, oh, please nudge me all the time. And the three of them, we work in a non-hierarchical workplace. And when somebody is not able, you know, out sick or whatever, we never lose a beat. And so this is an amazing group. I was on a call with a funder recently, and yes, Bill, we are a nonprofit, and we rely on the good graces of people donating to us. But I was on the phone with a major funder, and they said to me, "I always thought you were 10 people." So that's very heartening to know how hard these people work. And I'm proud of the work that the Roundtable does, and will continue to do. We keep our eye focused on equity. One other thing that I just got to put out there, and you brought it up about DEI. I'm tired of that acronym. I think what we need to do is call it out. It's diversity, equity, and inclusion. And which one of those three are you against? If you're against DEI, which one of those three are you against? And I dare you to tell me that.
Well, you know, I mentioned how the corporations, many of them are standing by it because they make more profit by having a stronger workforce with high morale. And they have found that if their workforce enables and empowers people and brings people of different cultures together for their own perspective to share toward a common goal, wow, unbelievable. Yeah. They make more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I know we're
tariffs
going to be
getting rid of DEI are probably not smart things for our economy either.
Thank you. But I know you're about to say goodbye on the show. I just want to put one other thing out. You mentioned all those other amazing environmental groups, and it's a collective, right? One organization can't do it all and shouldn't have to do it all. And so with the support of all those environmental organizations, with the support of labor, with the support
of interfaith,
yep, with the support of individuals, we can affect major change, but we have to be very dedicated and intentional about it.
Ending up here, I want you to give me your best Earth Day memory.
I was at the first Earth Day, and I went to a boarding school in New Jersey. A friend of mine and I hitchhiked to Princeton University and participated in the first Earth Day at Princeton. I don't know why we went to Princeton. I think it was just an easy hitchhike. But that was my first memory. There weren't a whole lot of people that showed up, but it was a lot of fun.
1972?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, April 22nd, 1972, right? 71 or 72?
I think it was earlier, actually.
71, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, that was my first Earth Day. And for Earth Day this year, we want to flood the Capitol with youth and make sure that the electeds know that this is the next generation. And if you don't do something right, these young kids, these young people, these young students will vote you out and put people in who will actually do the work.
Well, we're all struggling to survive on this pale blue dot, in the words of Carl Sagan. I want to thank Aziz Daykhan and all of his small staff that work so hard for us to fight against climate change at the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs. Please check out their website, sign up for notifications, help us get House Bill 5004 passed. And next week we'll be talking more about issues that are concerning to you for all the way from Washington to your town hall to the State House. Public Affairs is here. Alive and well on WICC 600, 95.9 FM, 600 AM. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week here on Wake Up.